Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network of David Duenas. I am your co-host, Steve Canine Kim, and joining me, as always, from the beautiful city of San Francisco, Golden Gate, Gabe Montoya. Mr. Montoya, good Monday to you.
Good Monday to you, sir. How you doing? Nothing an IB can't fix, I assume.
No, absolutely, and especially marked T-U-E. We've got a lot to talk about, folks. I have a feeling we will be going the full 2 hours here on this Monday night as we have a bevy of boxing here on the next round. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Once again, those digits, 347-215-7598. We'll take your phone calls in about 15 to 20 minutes. If you want to send us a question or a comment via Twitter, please do so at SteveUCNLive and Gabriel_Montoya. But let's get started with round number one. It's the return of HBO to the boxing business, live from the StubHub Center in Carson, California. It's Boxing After Dark. For the vacant WBC 140-pound title, The Machine, Lucas Martin Matisse takes on Victor Going Postal. And in the co-feature, a junior welterweight crossroads bout, 10 rounds of action, Humberto Soto takes on upstart Antonio Orozco. Gabe, it was at this very same venue about 16 months ago that Matisse was involved in the 2014 Fight of the Year against John Molina. I'm going to make a bold prediction right now. This fight against Postal will not be that exciting, but I think it will be every bit as interesting because I think Postal is a physical and stylistic nightmare for the man from Buenos Aires.
Oh, there's no question, man. I think, you know, neither of them are old. You know, the book, 31 for Postal, 33 for Matisse. But, man, I mean, the size difference in this. You know, Postal's 5'11 to 5'6 and a half for Lucas Matisse. He's not a big man, not a big welterweight. I think we could get a little surprise here and see a dominant performance. Postal is straight up and down. There's not a lot of frills to his game, but he's got a long jab. He comes back with the rear punch, the rear right, you know, very straight, hits hard enough. You know, he's not like a knockout machine, but he's just a big, strong guy. I think if he plays his cards right, he could be walking Matisse into some things. Stay out of, you know, long exchanges and just dominate through boxing. I think he's got a great shot.
Gabe, last Friday afternoon, I was able to see Victor Postal train. Two things really stood out. He must be on weight because on this particular day, which would have been 8 days from the time they touch him up, he had a very light workout. Was not in plastics on what was a sweltering hot day. Went through a very, very easy workout, and that's one of the things that I've learned. When you start seeing fighters close to a fight actually go through a full-tilt workout, that concerns me because that tells you right there's weight to be lost. This particular instance, he seemed like he could have probably made weight by the end of the weekend. Also, Victor Postal is very tall. He's 5'11", and he's lean as he is lanky, and he's one of those guys that's like a praying mantis. He's all arms, all legs. A lot of length, a lot of height, and he's also very, very European. Matisse is going to have to work very, very hard to breach that airspace and get inside and start banging the body. And I asked Freddie Roach very simply, do you box early and punch late? And he basically said, yes, that's the plan. And you're right, those type of guys, they get you frustrated from a strategic standpoint, then you start to reach and to lunge in, and that's where shots right up the middle, something that Freddie Roach talked about, come into play. I think this is a very, very difficult fight. I don't know who to pick. I certainly would not put my money on one of my favorite fighters in the world, Lucas Matisse, but I get the sense there's going to be some controversy. We have to look at the politics. This is a Golden Boy show. This is a Golden Boy stalwart. Victor Postol has a very awkward, difficult style, and I get the sense there's going to be a lot of close, difficult rounds to score. So my prediction will be I will take Matisse either late or in a somewhat controversial decision, Mr. Montoya.
You know, Postol has been trying to get a fight with somebody for a long time, and he's been avoided, and he's been avoided with good reason. I don't think this weekend they'll be able to avoid him any longer. I'm going to go with the upset special here. I'm going Postol 7-5 in a really tough fight. I think he's going to follow the Freddie Roach game plan. Matisse is a dangerous guy, but he's also been very well matched. And I think Freddie Roach is a guy that knows how to pick apart your strengths and weaknesses and develop a game plan around them. And I think we could see a little bit of a coming out party. But like we also saw, you know, Vadim Kornilov has Victor Postol. We saw when he faced, you know, with Provodnikov, his other guy, or one of his other guys, went up against a big machine like Tim Bradley. You're right. They got outmaneuvered a little bit, and the cards went to the guy that most people didn't think won the fight. So I think your scenario is highly likely, but I'm going out on a limb. I'm feeling a little crazy today. Give me some Victor Postol by unanimous decision.
Here's a key stat. Victor Postol, 27-0, only has 11 knockouts. So basically at the 10 and 12 round level, his fights are guaranteed to go at least 10, 11, 12 rounds. Taking a look at his overall resume, he does have some solid victories. Hank Lundy, DeMarcus Corley, and last year at the Forum against Selchuk Aydin. So he's unknown, but he's not necessarily unproven. And on the flip side, you take a look at Matisse, 37-3. The three losses, Zab Judah, Devin Alexander, and Danny Garcia, they have something in common. They're all very technically sound boxers that can move a little bit, if not a lot. Mm-hmm. You can make an argument that perhaps he caught up to Judah and Alexander. So
yes.
In the past, boxing skills and movement have troubled the machine. We're going to see on this night, is he going to win his first major professional title, believe it or not? This fight, I think, will be an action-packed chess match going into the second half where I think things will be right up in the air. And, Gabe, this is my stat of the week. And I didn't even realize this, so I looked it up. Humberto Soto, 65-8-2. Gabe, this guy has 75 professional battles under his belt. He truly is the last of a dying breed of prize fighters who, quite frankly, from this point forward, you're not going to see a lot of guys with 75 bouts on their box rec.
No, no, unless they're losses and they're facing like a PBC opponent. and it's in a row. You know, it's kind of interesting that Victor Postol is getting his shot against a top-tier guy on HBO on a card that features Humberto Soto, who's a guy that chased Manny Pacquiao, who's chased a lot of names, and always seemed to be the mandatory, never the challenger. He'd get the paper belt or the interim vacant belt, never get a chance to really rip it from somebody of note when he was in his prime. One of my favorite fighters coming up, when he was in the lower weight classes, man, he was a thing of beauty. At first, I thought he might have been a young Chino Trinidad. But he's kind of got a real basic but very balanced, offense-oriented, boxing style. It's aged well because he's a tall guy for the lower weight classes, 5'7 and a half. But I just think, you know, I don't know. With Orozco, he's got a chance. He's got experience. I think he can take it like he did with John Molina. He can take it from a younger guy. Is he going to be able to keep up with Orozco's pace? And will Orozco be able to keep up with his own pace? That's what I want to see. I think it's going to be a special fight.
At what point does experience become corrosion? While we could praise 75 fights, the other side is that's a lot of miles on the odometer. And Humberto Soto is always a guy. He didn't have great power. He had good enough power to stop guys late, but he always put in a lot of rounds. Now, Antonio Orozco's age 27 with the record of 22-0. Solid wins in the last year or so at the prospect level against the likes of Emmanuel Taylor, Steve Forbes, and then also a guy like Miguel Huerta. So this is going to be an interesting fight. I think the difference between a John Molina and Antonio Orozco is very simple. Technical acumen and overall boxing experience. To me, Johnny Molina had natural power, especially in the right hand. But let's face it, he was a wrestler growing up who's never been all that active for a guy with not that much experience in the ring. I'm going to say this. I think Soto will be very tough in the beginning. I do think Orozco's gotten quality rounds leading up to it, and I do think he will be able to out-hustle him. I cannot wait for this fight because there's going to be so many questions answered about this young man from Garden City, because for the first time, he's not just getting professional resistance. This is by far the most accomplished professional he will have faced up until this point. I think this is a 50-50 fight, and I think youth shall be served. I like Orozco by a smidge over Humberto Soto.
I'm with you. I think it's going to be a back-and-forth affair. I think Humberto might trouble him. It might be a bit of a puzzle early, using space, using distance correctly and going behind a jab. He has some nice combinations when he wants to let him go. He's technically sound, but as those miles catch up to him deeper into the fight, fighting at a young man's pace, I think Orozco takes over and pulls it out down the stretch. I think it's going to be fun. This card especially, man, really kind of made me miss this week. And I would say Golovkin-Lemieux, anytime Golovkin fights, makes me miss the beat a little bit. Getting a chance to see guys like this that are about to get their shot or stepping up, taking that next kind of challenger level, which I think Orozco is doing in this fight. It's going to be something else. This is going to be a hell of a fight, both of them.
I think, Gabe, this is the quintessential StubHub card. It's not necessarily the biggest names or the most marquee-centric fights, but they're real fights between guys that we know, guys that we like, with a lot on the line, and the fans that will be there are going to be real boxing fans. Moving on, the PBC on NBC landed in Alabama, and for the WBC Heavyweight Championship of the World, Deontay Wilder improves to 35-0, stopping Juan Duapas in 11 rounds. The Frenchman was very game. And on the opener, Dominic Brazil with a 10-round decision over Fred Cassie. Your scores, 97-93, 98-92, 100-90. Gabe, are people being too hard on Deontay Wilder? Because I think the Frenchman was very game. He was durable as advertised. And let's face it, Deontay Wilder, I think the problem is that in all reality, he might be just a prospect. But in this four-system belt era, he's good enough to be that fourth belt holder where Klitschko has the other three. But based on his overall experience, I do see some improvement than, let's say, 3 years ago. But in all honesty, I think I've seen some regression in the last fight or two, which I think is puzzling since what I thought was a very strong outing against Bermain Stiverne. What do you make of the Bronze Bomber?
I think it is unfair to say to constantly trash him. I think you're really on point that he's the other belt holder and he's developing, and that's this day and age. Since Canelo, I think is one of the guys that kind of set this modern era precedent of getting a guy a belt and then going, hey, hang on a second. He's only 21 years old, even though he's a champion, and you kind of hold him to a different standard, even though you're advertising him as the best in the division. Deontay, definitely, he feared Stiverne more than he's feared the last two guys. And I think he's learning how to fight down to his competition. I was talking to Dave Duenas today, I believe it in the ring, and we'll be back tomorrow night, I believe at 5 o'clock with Leave It in the Ring. But I was saying, if anything, because Dave was like, dude, he looks wild, he doesn't look good at all. And I said, but he looks more relaxed. And he's like, yeah, I don't think that's a good thing for Deontay Wilder. And I agree. He got caught with some shots by Duapas, who, I'd like to thank last week's me for making this week's me look like I know what I'm talking about. I called both these fights to be a little tougher than people were expecting. And Duapas was that. I mean, he pressured. He landed some good shots. He made Deontay work. And I think this fight and two or three fights is going to prove invaluable. If the WBC lives up to their word and makes Alexander Povetkin the mandatory in the next fight, he's going to need this fight. So it's good for him.
That is the question. We know that WBC has gone on record as saying that Alexander Povetkin is the mandatory challenger. He must get his shot in due time. Now, post Graziano Roccagiani, they're not nearly as brazen about just changing their mind. Also, Povetkin comes with some influence. There's a lot of Russian money behind him. And as we know in boxing, money talks. So I don't think they're going to change course, Mauricio Sulaiman. The biggest question, and we've talked about this particular dynamic for at least 6-7 months, does Deontay Wilder actually enforce a very tough mandatory where most odds makers have him as the betting underdog, or does he become the first quote-unquote PBC champion? We shall find out in the upcoming months. And Gabe, Dominic Brazil, here's another guy that I've seen at the gym. I know his trainer very well, Johnny Bray. I think the biggest mistake that they're going to make one is to rush this guy, because when I see Dominic Brazil, he's a guy that I still say to myself, yeah, he played football. That's what he is. He's a football player still trying to learn boxing. And as we know, Gabe, you might play football, you don't play boxing.
He reminds me of a small forward more, a little bit. You know, I could see the football in him. That other sport, he's not quite comfortable. The football, definitely, in that he stands there and kind of will just absorb punishment rather than avoid punishment. That's a hard mentality to get out of, and it's one that he needs to, because laying on the ropes and letting dudes hit you, or just kind of standing there in front of him and, you know, not stepping off to the side with just a double jab. You know, the old McAfee, what's better than a jab? A double jab. And just constantly doing that all night and training your body to do it. It's just not okay to sit there and get hit. He shouldn't have gone tooth and nail with Frank Cassie. He did. I mean, I think Cassie's kind of a shifty cruiserweight who's fighting up above his weight, because I think he's kind of quality, at least fun to watch. It was not a bad fight by any stretch. But I also it was a tough fight to score. I didn't really agree with the scorecards. I think they were a little kooky, a little pre-cooked.
One thing that was noticeable, just eyeballing it real quickly, Fred Cassie was very small. And you're right, he looked like a cruiserweight in there. The concern that I have about Dominic Brazil, and Freddie Roach told me about this one time, in training guys who played other sports, specifically football, where you're really padded up, you have a face mask and a helmet, the number one question is, can they take a punch? I have my concerns about Dominic Brazil when he faces guys who are a little bit more eye-to-eye with him and that can bang. I just wonder about Dominic Brazil. And in a couple of weeks, a fight that really interests me, believe it or not, in the PBC universe, because I think they may have bitten off a little bit more than they can chew, is Gerald Washington, who played football at USC, taking on a very heavy-handed Amir Mansour. Again, until you actually get hit right on the chops, you don't really know how these guys are going to react, sans headgear. And speaking of heavyweights, Gabe, we had our first buzzkill for the month of October. Vladimir Klitschko, Tyson Fury, has been postponed. Klitschko, with a calf injury, October 24th, Gabe, has gone to Bolivian.
This is one of the saddest things I ever heard. I had to kind of just go through Twitter, you know. It was just like, man. Because, I mean, just on so many levels, I wanted to see the fight, but then, you know, Fury has had this happen to him in big fights. It's got to be crushing for him. I mean, he got the Batman suit out, he had a whole costume and everything, and did the whole press conference, and then bang, it's all gone. That's got to hurt, man.
Yeah, Tyson Fury is the Chicago Cubs of the heavyweight division. There truly is the curse of the Billy Goat, as it comes to him. And Gabe, finally, it's showtime once again in Cincinnati, Ohio, from the U.S. Bank Arena for the vacant WBA 140-pound title. Adrian Broner takes on Khabib Alakverdiev. And then for the IBF lightweight title, Jose Pedraza takes on Edner Cherry Bomb. Gabe, call me crazy. I'm in the minority. I actually think this is a very good doubleheader. I think it's going to provide some action. And I think, and again, I know it's not saying much, I think this is by far the best Showtime card, at least on paper, of 2015.
There's no question about that. I think they've been crappy all year. It felt like they were like a bankrupted town with the old tumbleweeds flowing through it. But this fight, what I like about this card is it actually gives you and I a chance, and others that have been critical of the PBC, a chance to show that, no, we just want a good product. You guys put out something that's good, we will like it. We will enjoy it. And I think these fights are quality. Just like I thought last weekend, the heavyweights, you know, as much as we were making fun of it heading in, those were good fights that will serve both those guys, you know, very well down the road. You know, I think this is a tough fight. You know, Khabib, you say his name better than I do. I'll just call him the Hawk. He's a southpaw. He can move a bit. He's got straight punches. He's not afraid coming into this fight. I think he feels like he's the guy that can put another number on Adrian Broner, who the problem has been solved a little bit. If you're a disciplined boxer, if you're not afraid of him and you don't let him dictate the fight, you have a shot. I don't know why these guys are fighting for a title, but you know, that's a whole other issue.
Khabib Alakberdiev has a record of 19-1, and Gabe, in my book, he's 20-0. I thought he beat Jesse Vargas last year in Las Vegas. I think for Adrian Broner at age 26, this is a true crossroads bout, because coming off that disappointing, desultory, uninspired performance against Sean Porter, the fable, the Battle of Ohio in Las Vegas, I think right now his stock is at Enron levels. He's 30-2, and for all the belts that he's won, I think the lasting images and the defining moments have been two losses, first to Maidana, and then to Sean Porter, and quite frankly, from the Maidana fight to the Broner fight, the victories weren't all that impressive. And he went from being the next Floyd Mayweather to the next next Andre Berto, to steal a phrase from Larry Merchant. I think Broner's back is against the wall. Is he going to be a solid, world-class, marquee guy that the PBC and Al Haymon can bank on, or is he just a novelty act? I'm going to say it right now. I think Broner's going to have a very tough time. I think he knows he's in a real tough fight because Alakberdiev is a no-nonsense type of soldier. But I think Broner's going to bite down here, and I think he wins a well-contested, hard-fought 12-round decision, Gabe.
That's a tough one to call. I mean, if his mind is it right, Adrian Broner, he'll win. I mean, he'll go the distance in the fight, but he won't win. It's really going to come down to the back end of the fight. And if, you know, Khabib fights a very disciplined fight and is relentless the way he was with Jesse Vargas, I don't see it to being a fight where Adrian Broner keeps it together for the whole time. I thought Sean Porter pulled his trunks down and showed his ass to everybody. It was kind of an embarrassing performance in spots. He had a late moment, but he kind of got undressed a bit. I just think he's ripe for that. It's hard for me to bet on Adrian Broner. So I don't know if I should go to upset specials considering the politics. So I'll say that we won't feel that Broner quite won the fight, but he'll get the victory.
But yeah, Gabe, that's the other issue. This fight is in Cincinnati. I think right off the bat, regardless of who it is or who's promoting it, when a hometown fighter that has sold certain amount of tickets before and has a higher profile, it doesn't matter if it's Top Rank, Don King, Main Event, K2, there is such thing as the home canvas advantage. I just find it hard to believe that Adrian Broner right now isn't already up 2-0 on Alakberdiev. I think Alakberdiev is going to have to dominate to even get a draw in this particular setting. Gabe, I have a question for you. Jose Pedraza, last I checked, is Puerto Rican, right? Boxing's kind of popular up there. They revere their fighters if they're champions. Pedraza, in his last two fights, I don't understand this. Okay, has fought in Alabama and now Cincinnati. Now he's facing a real guy in the Cherry Bomb. This is one of my complaints about the PBC and trying to build things. If you have a Puerto Rican that is a world-class level fighter just winning a belt, kudos for fighting Edner Cherry, but why isn't this fight in San Juan or in Caguas?
Why isn't he being treated like the A side here? I mean, this is a real fight. It's a real dangerous fight. Correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, I don't know if Cherry, I think you pointed this out, has when he goes to 140, he loses, or he goes above 130, he loses. At 130, he doesn't lose. I mean, this is, it's going to be an interesting fight. He's got a lot of power. He's got movement. He seems, at 33, he doesn't seem like the wear and tear of all his fights is bothering him. He seems dangerous as ever. I like Pedraza to win this fight. I think he's a bigger guy, just more natural to the weight. He's going to be moving up in class. This is not his last stop. But yeah, you're right. I mean, in terms of marketing, what we're seeing in Jose Pedraza is a veer off from the old classic model of building a guy, you know, nationally or regionally, and instead making him part of a larger fold, which is the PBC. He's going to be an interesting guy to follow. Like you follow him in Verdejo and you go, because, you know, they're contemporaries. Ultimately, who will have the better career in terms of earnings and how they were marketed as an individual and who will be with the better company. That should be
Gabe, the last I checked, boxing is kind of popular in Viva Puerto Rico. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Let's go through some of the tweets here. Here's one from the Big Drama Show. Guys, does the PBC hire paid actors at ringside? Because it certainly looked that way at the Wilder fight. You know, I don't know that, but I do know this. They use companies like One Iota to fill seats, and from what I've been told, those seat-filling companies, they are paid to act very, very excited and engaged during the product.
Oh, dude, I mean, I was in it's the only time I've ever done this and the only time I ever will. And the movie's coming out, so I guess I can we signed like an NDA. But I was like background for one of the scenes in the new Steve Jobs movie coming out. And I shot for a few days, and on the second day, they brought in more people, and I forget the name of the company. It wasn't One Iota, but it was the same kind of idea, and they would bring people in. Our group paid, we were all passed as actors. The next group was like just regular people, and they were paid with lunch. It wouldn't surprise me if they, you know, at the last second when you got to fill a lot of seats, you'll do whatever it takes. You know, I'm doing that right now. We're co-producing a play and finding different ways to fill the seats. So I wouldn't, yeah, putting actors up front, that's interesting. I mean, I guess. Would that be wrong? I mean, is that false advertising that people are having a good time when they're not?
Here's one from Cheap Seats Boxing. If Wilder does not fight Povetkin, then where would his reign as heavyweight champion rank as far as the worst reign ever? Gabe, I'll say this. If they decide to abdicate the WBC belt and just say, you know what, forget it, we don't want Povetkin, we're going to be the PBC champion, and his two title defenses have come against a Mexican heavyweight and a French heavyweight, yeah, it's among the worst ever. Let's just call that for what it is.
Yeah, that's that makes Andre Berto's welterweight title reign look like a reign.
And here's one from the president, Andrew V. Kennedy. If Lucas wins, who do you think will see him in there with next? Some good options. You know, here's my dream scenario. If Lucas Matisse wins the WBC belt, and I know that Golden Boy will do it because they've reached across the aisle to do co-promotions with various people to make very good fights. How about The Machine against Terrence Crawford in 2016, Gabe?
Well, that's a hell of a fight. Yeah, I'd love that fight. I don't know if Matisse would like that fight because that's like the definition of a guy he had trouble with in his prime, but... But I think in terms of, you know, having to make Terrence Crawford walk through some fire and create just an action fight, that's a dream matchup.
Yes, and here's one from Naeem Bala, and I think this is directed just to me. Mr. Kim, in your professional opinion, do you think ESPN's College Game Day will be in Tallahassee next week if both Miami and Florida State win? I'm going to proclaim it right now. Miami, if they beat Cincinnati, which they should if Al Golden wants to keep his job, and Florida State wins, yes, I do believe October 10th that will be a College Game Day, and I believe that will be the ABC primetime game starting at 8 Eastern, which I'm hoping for because, quite frankly, I'm going to be there, and I want to have a full day of tailgating and drinking. 347-215-7598 is our number. We're going to be here for at least another hour going all the way up to 9 o'clock Eastern. Gabe?
All right, let's head to L.A. right off the bat. 323, you're live on the next round.
Fight on, gentlemen.
Sanch, now, okay, are you feeling a little bit better about the Fighting Sarkisian? Big win there in Tempe this weekend.
I'm happy that we got a win in Arizona, Steve. I'm a little bit more optimistic. The season's still fucking over. If we don't beat Notre Dame and that's what the caveat. If we don't beat Notre Dame and UCLA, the season's a wash. I'm still reeling because Espinosa has something on me on Twitter. I've been destroying him all the last couple of years, and he brings up that we lost to the Stanford. So I'm still upset. Anytime Espinosa gets something over me, I get a little irritated.
But okay. Tough crowd.
As he said earlier this week, Showtime is playing the long game with their boxing programming, which is probably why we haven't gotten shit this year.
All right. Does long game basically mean 2015 has been, in the words of Charles Barkley, terrible?
Terrible. I checked out the PBC card. Brazil, he didn't do nothing for me. It was just like no fundament. I know he's rough and raw around the edges, but like Gabe was saying, he was just letting my man tee off on him on the ropes. Like, this is not Ali Foreman rope-a-dope. I mean, come on. Deontay's like Tony Romo in the sense that I could watch him because something, he might get knocked out. That doesn't mean it's good. Doesn't mean it's like, I kept hearing the word of Sugar Ray and BJ Flores that this is a great fight. I'm like, really, guys? Come on. Really, seriously, like, come on. It was entertaining in spots. DuPaz came there to not try to win, but just to survive. I mean, I would have liked to see him let his hands go a little bit more, but what happened to imposing your will, you know what I mean, as a fighter? Like, why is Deontay fighting down to this level of competition? If anything, wouldn't it make a bigger star if he just goes and imposes his will real quick and has a tremendous knockout? Like, doesn't that add to the mystique? You know what I mean?
I think he needs rounds at this point. I mean, I think everybody likes to go home early. But I think, too, you know, Duapas, I mean, to Wilder's credit, he went to the body a lot, which you don't see guys do, you know. And I think that kind of slowed Duapas down. He couldn't go over the top because he kept getting crushed underneath. I mean, you know, I was pretty down on it heading in, but I knew that guy would be rough and tumble, and he was, you know. But I think Brazil, like, I come out of that fight going, when, you know, Deontay gets better, but I agree with you. When he gets knocked out, it's going to be bitty, like a counter shot, and it's going to be spectacular, probably like a counter left hook. But Brazil, he gets more rounds. I still don't think he's going to be that good. I just don't think he has that high of a ceiling at all. I'm not, you know.
Guys, I think Wilder was in the ultimate no-win situation because if he blows the guy out in 90 seconds, well, you're fighting a 25-1 underdog. But then if he gets rounds, it's like, why are you getting rounds with Johnny D? The thing that I found alarming with Deontay Wilder was the way, early on in the fight, without really getting hit, but just the fact that Johnny D put a little bit of psychological pressure on him, I haven't seen Deontay Wilder go on his back foot to that degree. He was backing up for much of the night, and I thought it was alarming that his left eye really swelled up, and I don't remember him getting hit all that many times. It'll be interesting. Again, they're going to have to make a decision regarding the Povetkin fight. I just wonder, what direction are they going to go in?
And that was my thing, guys. The fight before that with, what was the guy's name? Molina? Was that his name?
Eric Molina.
Eric Molina, yeah. He fought Molina. And I just wanted to see, I knew the Frenchman was going to back him up. I just wanted to see Deontay add that wrinkle of, okay, can he fight a little better backing up and going off his back foot? And I did not see, it seems like he's going to work on that. You know what I mean? Because it wasn't good against Molina, and it was still not, it seemed even worse against Jonathan here. I wasn't expecting Deontay to like show me leaps and bounds. I'm okay, Deontay. I'll watch your fight. Just give me that you worked on fighting off your back foot a little bit more, and then I'll give you. I'm not going to be as hard on you. But I didn't even see that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I agree.
And we got the fights coming up. I'm going to go. I think the war ground mystique is going to take over this week, guys. And I think, I know it stylistically it might not be good, but I think the boxing guys are going to shine down on us at StubHub, and I think Matisse Postal is going to be a hell of a fight, and I'm going upset special. I'm going Postal. I'm, as much as I want Lucas to win, I just think that this guy, Postal, is going to come out, and this is his chance to have a coming out party where guys can't avoid him if he looks spectacular in doing it. I'm going with Orozco, and you got me, Steve. I want the Can Man to win only because his obnoxiousness is entertaining. And I just want to see what's going to come out of his mouth next, just so I could laugh, and it creates more fodder. And I think AB is about boxing this weekend. He gets it done.
Okay, Sant, you have been heard. Fight on, and please call in once again.
All right, then. Let's move on down the line. We've got a lot of calls. All of a sudden, we lit up. 619, you are live on the next round.
Hey, guys. It's Juan from San Diego.
Juan, welcome aboard.
How you guys doing?
Doing all right.
Very good. I have a couple of comments and questions for you guys. First off, this weekend, Lucas Matisse. Well, I think the first example of a guy that, you know, has three losses on his record. And, you know, I think zero losses, you know, the big zero on the loss column is overrated. I think Lucas actually is a better fighter right now than Danny Garcia, who is, to me, the only guy who had beaten him. I didn't see Devon and Sab beat him. I thought he beat them. But I think that Lucas has developed into a better fighter than Danny Garcia has. And in the end, I think that even though I don't know a lot of stuff, I think that Lucas has that it now. And I think that he's learned from his experiences in the past, and he'll probably end up winning a close fight. And that fight against Ruslan proved a lot to me that, you know, the guy little and learn how to, you know, to deal with the pressure of a tough fighter in Ruslan, and showed a lot of skill there. It takes a lot of skill to deal with a guy like that. The question I have for you, and correct me if I'm wrong, but what do you guys see in Kell Brook and the other guy, Plotkin? I don't get it. I just look at those guys and hear a lot of praise here and there for them. And as far as I know, Brook, and that fight to me was a whole fest. To me, that's not impressive. So I don't see how people rate him as the best welterweight. I can't see it. And I want your honest opinion on that one. And also, Pavetkin, I don't see it also. I don't see what's so great about him.
Well, Juan, as it relates to Pavetkin, what they see is a very vulnerable Deontay Wilder. Because let's be honest, we saw Pavetkin against Klitschko, and he wasn't very competitive. Sometimes it's not about the guy. It's about the guy he's going to face. And it's the lesser of two evils, if you will. As it relates to Kell Brook, I admit he's a bit of a polarizing figure. Guys like me, Gabe, and my other partner on my other podcast, Mario Lopez, we're all in on Special K. But I think that the problem that some people have with him is that he doesn't do anything great, but I do think he's the very definition of well-rounded. And I think those guys, over the course of time, prove their value.
Yeah, you're right. It's probably that right now I just don't think he's done enough to be put as the best. I think even a guy that seems a little bit more vulnerable, like, what's his name, Keith Thurman?
Thurman?
Has a little bit more on him. Yeah, I see a little bit more there, a little bit more accomplishments. But, yeah, Brook may turn out to be that guy, but I don't think he's there yet, at least from an accomplishment perspective. Now, on Broner, I wanted to comment something on him, and I said it in the past, but I just want to say it again. I was looking at my Twitter feed today, and I saw Showtime again, you know, but he's back, he's coming back, Broner. Like, he was someone we're looking forward or want to see him again. And to me, the turning point to me, because I did like to see him because he's a figure, you know. But the turning point was his interview after the Molina fight, where he said that he wasn't ever going to fight for the fans again. And to me, that was the point when I said, okay, so I'm not going to pay for you again ever. So that's, to me, that's Broner. He doesn't deserve my money with him saying those things.
No, I completely understand that. Now, Juan, what are your plans Saturday night? Will you be in Carson? Will you be home? Will you DVR one show and watch the other? What's your itinerary?
Well, I was seriously considering going to Carson. I got some emails that they were, you know, offering some discounts. And my wife's birthday is Friday, so I'm not sure how that's going to turn out. But I don't know. I probably will go. I'll probably end up, I can't resist a $25 ticket, you know, to see Lucas Matisse. That's a good deal to me.
Oh,
hey,
it's a great deal.
Not a bad seat in the house there, Juan. Just keep that in mind.
Best experiences ever right there. I was at the Rafael Marquez Israel Vasquez, the first one and the third one. I was at the Margarita Williams there. I was at Triple G fight. I've always had a great time there, except once. I'll tell you, only one time, Andre Ward.
Wow. By the way, I was at that one too, but going back to Vasquez Marquez 3, To this day, not only is it one of the top five or six fights I've ever been to ringside, the thing that I'll never forget was I think for about 15 to 20 minutes after that unbelievable ending to that fight, nobody left the arena. I don't think anyone left their seats. There's like this electricity in that venue, and I think that really sealed it as that being the modern-day Grand Olympic Auditorium.
Yeah, the only fight that I would compare the electricity I felt on that fight was Cotto Margarito 1. I think that that energy, but Vasquez Marquez was a way better fight. So, yeah, that was great. I'll never forget that moment.
All right, so Juan, maybe I'll see you there.
Hopefully. See you guys.
All right. Thank you very much, as always. If you want to jump in, we're here for at least another 50 minutes, 347-215-7598. It's the next round on the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network. I'm Steve Kim, joined as always by Gabriel Montoya.
I was at both of those, Margarito Cotto 1 and Marquez Vasquez 3. And you're right, like both of them had the same effect on the crowd. Margarito stayed in the ring for a long time. The crowd seemed to stay out there for like 15 minutes after the fight. Just like, what the hell did we just see? It was truly unbelievable. Only boxing can do that. CT, you are live on the next round.
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing tonight?
CT, welcome aboard.
What's up, man?
I just like to talk about the two fights that are coming up. Well, I know there's more fights, but I just like to talk about the two of them. Talk about, I think Matisse is going to be in a very hard, tough matchup. I think he's got to set traps with Postol and try to get him against the ropes. He's got to go to the body a lot because Postol is really good at controlling distance with his legs. He's got really good boxing ability and uses the jab very well. And he has a really nice rhythm once he starts to get that jab going. It's going to be pretty difficult, I think, for Matisse to get any power shots off early. He's going to have to grind him down a little bit, set some traps like I was saying. And I can see him winning. I'm going to go with Matisse with a decision when you're close, though. But the only reason why I'm going to give him a decision, I can see a couple of knockdowns by Matisse in this fight. But it's going to be a very competitive fight. If he can't get inside, it's going to be close, though. But I'm going to go with Matisse.
You're on the record, CT.
And then with the Broner and Alec Berdiev, I think it'll be very interesting. I want to see, you know, Broner's at mentally and psychologically after the Porter fight, but I think he's going to be a little bit more aggressive in this fight because Alec Berdiev he's got really good skills, but I can't really see him getting Broner's attention with his power, you know. Broner usually has trouble with pressure fighters, and I think I can see Broner walking him down, and like you guys said, he's going to be in his hometown, so I think it's stacked against Alec Berdiev, and I see Broner winning by decision.
If Broner is even two-thirds of the guy that some people forecasted him as being, and he was never going to be Floyd Mayweather, that was always a mirage, you have to beat Alec Berdiev, and I mean beat him handily, because Jesse Vargas, even though I don't think he won, Jesse Vargas hung in there with him. So that's who you're judging him against. On this particular weekend, how does Broner do against Khabib Alec Berdiev compared to Jesse Vargas? If he is who we thought he was, in the words of Dennis Green, you beat him handily. We shall see.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, CT, thank you very much. As always, Gabe, who's next?
212, you're live on the next round.
Hey, Steve. Hey, Steve and Gabe, how's it going?
Good, what's going on?
From New York.
Good, what's up?
Hey, guys, I just want to say I hope that Adrian Broner loses this week. I just don't want to hear of the guy. You know, him, Berto, and Judah. You know, Steve, you wrote an article about Judah. You know, next time you're thinking about an article about either of those three, just go to sleep or go party. I just don't want to hear them. They're overrated. They don't work hard. I don't think it's worth your ink or your time to be writing about them.
You know what the great thing about Zab Judah and the last article I wrote, which I really believe not only should it be up for a Barney, but maybe a Pulitzer Prize. It really is like the boxing version of Grapes of Wrath, the fine prose that I wrote, that before I could even hit the send button, he had already punched out the guy or shoved the guy at the weigh-in, and the fight got canceled. That, in a nutshell, is Zab Judah.
Definitely, guys.
I've finally gotten mature. I've really got things together. Oh, wait a minute. I'm ready for one last run.
So, Domingo, are you going to at least watch Adrian Broner, or does your animosity run to a point you don't even want to view the thing, you just want him to lose?
Yeah, I just want him to lose. I think he's just, you know, he's just he's a waste of talent, you know, him. It's a shame because, you know, he has some tools that he could, you know, he could be a decent fighter. You know, he has some pop, you know, but he just, the lack of effort, the disrespect for the sport is just what troubles me.
You know, maybe I'm nuts, though, but it's characters like this that, to me, make the game fun. And again, would I want my son or daughter or my son and daughter to date anyone like Adrian Broner? Hell no. But as long as you're at a safe distance from him, the guy, to me, is still amusing. I do believe he has some talent. Again, he was never going to be the next Floyd Mayweather. But I do think there is a base of natural talent. And I'll say this. If there's not a sense of urgency this week, the guy's absolutely hopeless.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, guys, by the way, Triple G, I'm actually going to try to go to the fight. I think this is going to be a good test. But, you know, currently, what's your opinion of him on the pound for pound? Because, you know, they have him as high as number two, and he hasn't really beaten nobody. You know, he's beaten some decent B-level fighters, but, you know, he's not like Chavez, who had Rosario and Taylor, or Tito, who had David Reed and Vargas on his resume when they ranked him as high. Like, he hasn't really beaten anybody to be ranked as high as number two.
For me,
go ahead, Gabe.
The only time I think about pound for pound, which is never, is if I'm like saying, you know, I wonder if Triple G would beat Klitschko, and we are talking about their styles, and all things being equal. Other than that, I don't have a pound for pound list. And you know, I think the economics of things dictate who's the quote unquote best fighter in the game. I mean, they don't all fight each other, so there's no way to ever find out. I mean, I honestly think Julian Williams might be, you know, one of the best, or if not, you know, top five, 154 pounders, but there's only one way to find out. So I just don't, you know, I don't think about stuff like that.
As I've said it before, pound for pound lists are mental masturbation.
Take it easy, guys.
Domingo, as always, thank you very much. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. A little bit later, we'll go through some news and notes and the fight review and preview. Gabe?
Let's see. Let's keep it in the East Coast. 347, you are live on the next round.
What's up, guys? It's Mike. How you doing?
What's up,
Mike,
man?
How you doing? Look like you're doing some cutting and scratching like Jam Master Jay there. Nice intro.
Yeah, I had it on speaker. My bad. What was I going to say? I just forgot. Is this Lucas Matisse fight? It's a 12-round fight, right?
It's for the vacant WBC 140-pound title, so the stakes are very high.
Okay, I was just wondering because I didn't know if it was a title fight. All right. And this, what about the Edna Cherry fight? Is that a 12-round fight also?
Yes, that's for the IBF 135-pound title, and Broner Alakverdiev, much to the consternation of certain observers, that's for the vacant WBA 140-pound title. So a lot of belts on the line. This is a Birkenstock weekend. Belts, belts, belts everywhere.
It's kind of like, it's fashion week for boxing.
Yeah.
Where do you think Matisse would go with the win with this fight? Would he be in stakes for Pacquiao, or really be in stakes for Pacquiao, or do you think that's just Aaron Sultan?
He's at a point where Bob Arum is at least using his name as cover for other fights. So is he really within striking distance? You know, you'd have to ask Bob. Bob keeps making him one of the Fab Five, but you know, if you were to ask me, Steve, out of all the names being listed for Manny Pacquiao for his return in 2016, Kell Brook, Amir Khan, Terrence Crawford, and the like, who would I choose? If Matisse beats Postal and has a major belt at 140, I'm going with the Machine.
I agree. I would love to see that fight. That's such a great styles matchup. I would love to see that fight. And one more thing. Say Deontay Wilder doesn't fight Povetkin. What does he do?
What does he do? Does he keep thanking Al, Gabe?
Thanks is lucky, Al. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, if he dumps the belt, I mean, there is that precedent, but there I had other belts, you know. When you
and
only have one belt.
In the world.
What's that?
And there were other fighters. Like right now, I mean, was he to fight Dominic Brazil?
Gerald Washington? Chris Areola?
Seth Mitchell Carlos still around, maybe? Or
Antonio Tarver? Steve Cunningham?
Kind of in Razor Ruddock just lost, but, you know.
Guys, you know, those fights would all be for the, heavyweight championship of the world.
That's
the free BC?
Yes, yes. Anything else we can do for you?
Yeah, just one more question. No, actually, two more. What the hell's going on with Mikey Garcia, one? And two, is Canelo Cotto, is there any drug testing?
Gabe?
I'm not sure about Canelo Cotto. I know Cotto has used USADA testing. He used it with you know, Martinez, but they kind of did it late in the game, like 5 weeks out, something like that. Because you know, USADA is all about the protocols being on the up and up. So I don't know about this fight. You know, and there's word about you know, Matisse Postal are supposedly being VADA tested. I'm not sure if they've been welcomed into the program or not. I know Triple G Lemieux, there's talk that is also being tested. But again, you know, I haven't confirmed anything with VADA myself, and I'm actually actively trying to do that. So we'll see. I'll probably know by midweek to next week.
Yeah, and as for Mikey Garcia, he just keeps hanging out in Bolivia. I think this has been another lost year for him. I keep hearing there's going to be a settlement and he's going to go with Al Haymon and he's at a lot of the PBC shows. But as of yet, I've heard nothing concrete in terms of some sort of settlement or a payoff to Bob Arum to make him walk away. So as of right now, I think Mikey Garcia is in limbo.
Yeah, just a waste of a career, waste of a talent. But hey, you know, it's his decision. All right, guys, I'll let you go. You guys have a good night.
Thank you, Mike. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll go through some news and notes. If you want to call in, jump in at 347-215-7598.
I don't really miss Mikey Garcia, personally. 787, you're live on the next round.
Hi, guys. This is Javier.
Oh, well, this is Javier. So, Javier, when are you taking your flight to Cincinnati to see Jose Pedraza?
I'm not, because he's in Cincinnati. You know, if he should be fighting here. He should be fighting here. You know, you guys talk, and I don't want to say something bad about Verdejo, but right now, Pedraza has beaten better opponents than Verdejo, but Verdejo is the most famous of the two because they haven't promoted Pedraza right.
Well, Javier, in all due fairness, though, Verdejo is still considered a prospect. So, I mean, again, yeah, you know, it's a little bit...
Yeah, but
like
they turned pro, like, at the same time. It was just that top brand know how to market Verdejo, and they're doing it on the right track, because Pedraza beat Farinas, who I think is the best fighter he has beaten, but Pedraza is fighting this week and nobody is talking about it here in Puerto Rico. And that's a shame, because he's a world champ. He's a world champ. And he's fighting under Cherry, who won fought in Puerto Rico and who just beat a Puerto Rican. So what the hell does another fight in Puerto Rico?
Wow, Javier, you are fired up, my friend. You really are.
Yeah, it really bothers me, because I think PBC is considering doing a card here with McWilliams Arroyo in about a month or something like that.
That's a barn burner.
And I remember saying, again, that's what the Arroyo. If they win titles, great. A Puerto Rican, I love for them to win titles. But Pedraza should be the one headlining, I believe, in Puerto Rico. Do you guys think?
The bottom line is this. Right now, Verdejo is probably realistically 12 to 18 months away from fighting for a major belt. I don't see Felix Trinidad walking through that door. Miguel Cotto is on the very tail end of a Hall of Fame career, so there's a transition period. Logic tells me, and maybe I'm wrong, gentlemen, but a Jose Pedraza fits in right now. It just makes no sense to me. Fine. You had to fight Andre Klimov in Alabama. Okay, it's for a vacant title. But don't you think the first title defense should be in, I don't know, the island? It just makes no sense to me, but I think that's the difference when you talk about Verdejo to Pedraza, the difference in having a real promoter and a television packager.
Guys, now that you mentioned Cotto, you guys been covering boxing for a long time. But Cotto started today his training on the wild card. But somebody pointed out this to me, and it kind of makes sense. We all know that the last week of training, you don't do anything. And Cotto is not going to have a problem making the weight. Do you guys find it odd that the only he's decided to have a six-week training camp?
You know, it's 6 weeks, though. You know, Emmanuel Stewart one time told me he thought eight-week training camps were a bit too long. If guys are in shape and physically don't come in 30 pounds above the weight, listen, back when guys used to fight seven, eight, nine times a year, they never camped for more than a month, Gabe.
Now, that's very true. Emmanuel would preach that pretty often, actually. Seven weeks, I think they did for Hagler, I want to say, with Tommy. But he's like, he liked 6 weeks, 7 weeks, be, you know, kind of pushing it if you really want to go deep. But the guy should be in shape. You know, they were always, you know, training, having those gym wars. They were always ready to rock and roll in case you got a short notice fight or whatever. I think Pedraza, it is interesting. Like I was talking about earlier, he's more accomplished. He's fought better guys thus far, and they've turned pro at the same time. But nobody knows who the hell he is except for the people that have him. It doesn't make any sense. When you have a piece like Danny Garcia, who's, you know, more of a, you know, he's a Puerto Rican, but from Philly, you can move him over and maybe you piggyback with the two of them and you have something on the island. But when you have a bunch of names on one side, a bunch of venues you can use on another, and a bunch of dates that you've bought, and you're just mixing and matching, and you're trying to build you as the brand, the PBC, and not the fighters, to me, it is the beginnings of gathering data and seeing which version works better. I know which side I'm betting on. I'd rather be Verdejo in a couple of years with, you know, fighting in the garden, taking on a legacy that's already built and being able to fight on the island when I want to.
But by the way, guys, the NHL really scares me to that. I believe that's a really, really tough fight. And one last thing, guys.
Sherry?
There is a Puerto Rican fighting tomorrow. To be honest with you, he was a good amateur and suddenly went to Bolivia and to the States. His name is Carlos Velasquez. He's fighting Javier Fortuna. To be quite honest, I haven't really seen him since he left Puerto Rico because he was like the one Puerto Rican that went to live in and to do all-star boxing cards and nobody really saw them. Do you know if he has a realistic shot against Fortuna? Because I know Fortuna is very strong, but he can be a box.
Yeah, does he? I guess he does. I mean, Fortuna is vulnerable. He's also very boring if he doesn't blow you out of there early. It's not a bad fight. It's, you know, one of those PBC cards I got to kind of DVR and just, like, cut through most of the crap, I'll be honest with you.
He's also bigger. This is another one of those kind of upset specials this week. I mean, you know, there's a big giant red moon out there, and it's in Aries, and apparently a lot of crazy stuff is going to be going on because of it. And that sort of thing. And it's all over the Facebook, so it must be true. But you look at this, and Fortuna's 5'5", 68.5-inch reach. Velasquez has got a 70-inch reach, and he's 5'9". He's a bigger guy. He's natural to the weight. I think, you know, it's going to be a tough thing because I don't think that the Fortuna's technique holds up over the long haul, like Steve said. He kind of, once he can't blow you out with power and explosiveness early, he could be hunted down and outboxed. This is an interesting fight. If you thought a lot about this guy, Javier, then it makes it even more interesting to me.
Yeah, and for the record, Javier, before we let you go, Danny Garcia is Philly Rican, not Puerto Rican. Let's make that very clear.
That's the word I was thinking for.
Yeah, guys, but you know, we don't have that many champions left, so we will take whatever.
That is desperate. That is desperation, Javier. You're going to be ashamed. That is very un-WEPA. Very un-WEPA.
We will take whatever we can take right now. Because, to be quite honest with you, I love Rocky Martinez. I thought he was a good fight. I saw him lose to Sully. So let's be clear about that. And Puerto Rican, you know, I love her Puerto Rican as much as the next guy.
Okay. Javier, listen, I'll see you in a few weeks, okay?
Yeah, I see you in Vegas.
Absolutely. WEPA.
Okay. Thank you.
Gabe, let's get to the fight review. A couple of cards that went on this past weekend on UNAMAS. Andy Ruiz is downsized, and he beat Joel Gottfried in 8 rounds. And on BN, 112-pound belt holder Juan Francisco Estrada, an absolute buzzsaw, takes apart a game Hernan Tyson Marquez. Then on FS1 last Tuesday night, Julian Williams, J-Rock, with the statement, knocking out Luciano Cuello in 1. Gabe, Andy Ruiz, he fought a complete survivor. And to put this into perspective, Joel Gottfried was actually at the wild card as a sparring partner for Dennis Lebedev. And I think something happened with Devin Vargas. And they said to Gottfried, hey, you want to make a few bucks over the weekend? Okay, good. Just take this fight over here to Fresno and show up against Andy Ruiz. So I don't know what you could really take out of this. I will say this. If Andy Ruiz can stay on the course, shed a few more pounds, I'll say it right now, Gabe, he's never going to be Charles Atlas. He'll never make the cover of Muscle and Fitness. But by today's standards, I think he can be a real player in the heavyweight division.
He looked a lot better, you know. I thought his energy levels looked good. I think it was by the second or third round, you could see Andy get the guy on the ropes and go, oh, he isn't playing possum, he's playing survivor. And he'd move out to center and be like, come on, dude, let's do this. There's not a lot you can learn from that other than patience and how to pick your spots. Andy has never been at a loss for offense. What I want to see is how he can drive that engine and meet out his energy and be in better physical condition, not look like, you know, so soft. He did all that in this fight for me. I want to see him with some resistance. He fought at his pace. I want to see him, albeit that's a good – solid pace. I want to see him pushed and pushed back and hit back and see him with some professional resistance now. But it was a good fight for him. I think it's the kind of fight that you hope you look back to later and say those were good rounds.
October 24th on the Terrence Crawford Dieri Jean card, he will be on the undercard. So there's no doubt Top Rank, they are absolutely going to keep him busy just to make sure he doesn't blow up like the Goodyear blimp again. Andy Ruiz, if he puts his nose to the grindstone, I'm telling you, he has natural hand speed, natural fluidity, and he knows how to relax in the ring. And he's not an athlete. He's a boxer, which I think is a huge difference. And, Gabe, I was really impressed by Estrada because Tyson Marquez, I thought, put up a really game effort. You got the sense that he even knew this is last chanceville, and he was not going to go out easy. But Estrada was just a buzzsaw this past weekend.
Unbelievable. Yeah, for the first, you know, 2-3 rounds, you felt, okay, Marquez, he's a respectable dude, and he's got power, and he's going to be in there. But a lot of that was his undoing, is being in there and staying in there and absorbing those body shots started to put him down, and he just started to come apart at the seams. Estrada, talk about getting better after a loss. I mean, that nip-and-tuck fight with Gonzalez, where he didn't see his will bend and then break in that fight. He wanted it all the way to the end. Man, I'm kind of glad that HBO went the way they went with Chocolatito and going with Valoria. Save this fight for a little bit later because I want to see that rematch again. And I think fans will as these two move ahead.
Gabe, does Austin Trout, for all his talk, now that he was kind of backed up against the wall, do you believe for one second he really is going to fight Julian Williams at the beginning of 2016?
Yes, I do.
You do? Okay.
Well, I don't think people in the PBC have all that much free will. You know, when a guy moves into a position the way that Julian Williams did, that was spectacular. I said on last week's show, I'll be impressed if Julian beats Cuello, you know, handily. I'll be really impressed if he knocks him out. And he did it inside of, a minute? a couple minutes in the first round. He just blows the guy out. And it was really, Cuello never got untracked. Williams didn't let him get untracked by hitting with the jab up and down, mixing up his shots, and just hammering through and around the high guard of Cuello until he caught him with something he didn't see and just put him out. It was some people say maybe it was a quick stoppage. I don't. I didn't see good things happening for Cuello after that moment. He didn't seem to complain all that much. I think Trout is going to be moved into position with Williams. I think it's a perfect fight for him. And it's just that time. Who else is Trout supposed to be fighting?
Yeah, you know, Julian Williams, was he supposed to beat Luciano Cuello? Yes, but Cuello traditionally and historically has been very durable. He got him out of there in 90 seconds. In this game, style points matter. It's not if you win sometimes, it's how you win. That was a statement. And Austin Trout has been on the Al Haymon scholarship for a very long time. Either step up or step out. And I know for a fact Julian Williams has wanted this fight since at least the beginning of this year. If that fight does not happen, all the blame goes to the fish from Albuquerque. Bottom line, simple as that. If you want to call in, we have at least another 25 minutes remaining here. 347-215-7598. And if you want to tweet us, at SteveUCNLive, at Gabriel_Montoya. Gabe?
561, you're live on the next round. 561. 561?
Whoa, what's going on here?
I don't know.
A lot going on. Whoa, hey.
Maybe the NFL started. 510, you're live on the next round. 510. And they dropped off. Okay.
There must be a lot of Packer fans out there.
It must be. 312, you're live on the next round.
Hi, is that me?
Yes, it is.
Okay, yeah, hey. I wanted to talk about the Andre Wilder fight.
Please do.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. It wasn't much of a fight, but I think he certainly has a career as an actor. think about it. I was watching the fight, and the fight wasn't – when the guy he was fighting couldn't even throw a punch. If he had a left hook, the fight would have been over. But I was thinking DeAndre Wilder – I wrote a screenplay during watching the fight. I mean, he has a career. I could see him playing opposite Tyler Perry as Tyler's younger sister.
Whoa.
Call her Deidre, who wants to be a female boxer. Okay, and...
Wow.
And, I mean, Al Haymon could play in this role. He could be a music producer who wants her not to box, but to sing. And there's so much play up in here. You know, there's a part for Floyd. He could be Shanae. But the thing about this is that she's a boxer, but she does have a violent past because she's beaten up her husband, who can be played by Adrian Broner. I mean, I think, you know, there's so much with the TV because they have all the characters already there, right in their own little Nick group. It's already an acting group. You know, you have announcers. Everybody's an actor.
Now, I assume that you did watch the show on Saturday. What were your general thoughts?
Well, when I was watching the fight, I kept thinking, okay, when I was watching fight, my only thought was that if he was actually fighting somebody with some power, with a left hook, this fight would have been over. Also, how the referee could allow somebody to put that much Vaseline on his face and nobody from even the other guy's corner say something about shouldn't you wipe some of that off? Because, you know, he looked like a ghost at one point. He had so much Vaseline on his face.
Okay, so coming up this weekend, we have two shows here, one on HBO and one on Showtime. Which one are you watching live? Which one are you going to DVR?
Well, I would watch HBO, there's really no reason to watch Showtime. There's really no reason to watch Showtime. The only thing to watch Showtime for is to find out at the end of the year what kind of changes they're going to make in their executive office.
Do you watch Showtime for at least Ray Donovan or a season with Notre Dame football?
Okay, I would watch it for Ray Donovan. That's
okay,
the only reason to watch it.
They had a great season.
Right, because really, you can't call the PBC or anything they do actually a sport because they pay for the time. It's actually like a infomercial. They pay for the time. They have a set time to go through a sporting event. If it goes past the allotted time they have, they continue on. They get everything in. And I even thought they stopped that fight because I was talking to my girlfriend. I said, they have a lot of time. They have to get this thing done by before the top of the hour because the news is going to come on. They have to get it done.
Now,
and the guy, you know,
obviously, you're not a fan of the PBC. When did you sour on it? How many shows in did you say, yeah, this is not for me?
When they first started out and they were talking about they weren't going to they were overpaying fighters and they weren't buying – they weren't you know, the networks weren't involved in it. They were buying time. It seemed almost like a Ponzi scheme to me from the beginning.
Because
Heyman is getting paid –
yes.
A piece of every fighter, okay? And he's not trying to make a profit. And I'm saying, I understand they got the money from a hedge fund.
Waddle and Reed.
I think that's going to be that's going to take Heyman down because as that doesn't come to fruition, no money made, because there's no guarantee when you have investments. Somebody is going to say that he never tried to make a profit. They never tried to make a profit. They put shows on. They took money. They overpaid fighters. He got a portion of everybody's purse. And he got – so everybody who's involved in the show got paid, but anything that has to do with the investment is going to fail. And I think what's going to happen is those pension funds come due – if they have pension funds in there, somebody is going to wind up saying they want to sue. They're going to get class action lawsuits. Something's going to be done. Because it doesn't seem like he's trying to make a profit. He's just trying to show where he spent money. The money he had, he took it, he spent it. It didn't show a profit. Hey, that's the wheeling and dealing and investment. You take a chance, you lose.
That is a very, very, very interesting theory. Mm-hmm. Very interesting, I must say. Very.
Yeah.
Anyway, listen, thanks for the call. Please call in again.
Yeah, thank you.
And, Gabe, I have a feeling that gentleman right there will not be watching Javier Fortuna tomorrow on FS1.
Yeah, I think it's pretty safe to say. In the 813, you're live in the next round. 813.
Hello. 813.
Is it me?
Yes, it is. The one and only.
Hey, guys, what's going on? Totally unexpected. That was quick. I just called in.
Well,
welcome
aboard.
I don't even have anything to say right now, guys. I appreciate it, though. Call me by surprise.
Oh, no worries. Okay. So would that be – we'd have to rebrand them the Ponzi Boxing Champions?
Gabe.
You know, I should have asked the guy. 786, you're live on the next round.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello.
Hey, how's it going, Steve? How's it going, Gabe?
Good. What can we do for you?
Not much, man. Just calling from the East Coast, from the Miami area. And this is the first time here. Hello?
Hello,
can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
All right, yeah, I'm sorry, Steve. Yeah, I'm calling from the Miami area, and this is the first time hearing about the broadcast, and I just want to say it's pretty good hearing all boxing news. And, listening about the PBC, you know, people are complaining, just like the caller earlier, the Puerto Rican caller, he was saying that why isn't Pedraza fighting in the island? And also, like, you know, since my hometown, Miami, we got fighters like Riondoa and Lara and, you know, Gamboa. These guys, you know, they don't even fight in Miami. I mean, I think when they first came from the island, they fought in Miami. But after that, they've been fighting in Vegas and who knows, Chicago. But there's never local – there's never, like, local shows. And, you know, it's kind of – you guys in the West Coast have it made pretty much because you guys get all the best fights and – And, you know, I get kind of jealous. You know, here in Miami, we don't get any of the fights. And,
now,
you know,
hold on. Can I ask you a question? What is your nationality? Do you happen to be Cuban?
No, I'm Puerto Rican. I'm Puerto Rican.
Okay, well, here's the issue, though, with the whole we need to put Cubans in South Florida / Miami. People have been saying that for about 25 years, and the people in the business will tell you that they've tried it, and I know one of the local promoters out there, Bad Dog Productions, that simply the older generation of Cubans does not see eye to eye or support the newer generation of Cubans.
Well,
there's
a huge
cultural clash, and I know promoters that have tried to do all Cuban shows, and they can't even sell 500 tickets. I'm telling you, and I know Miami because I go there often.
Yeah.
I go to a lot of Miami games or some. And unless Miami is a top 10 team playing Florida State, they play to a lot of empty stadiums. It is what it is. It's not a great
sports city
like Green Bay or, you know, Tulsa, Oklahoma, where they support their locals. It's a different dynamic up there.
Well, you know what, Steve? You know, being Puerto Rican, but also I was raised by Cubans. You know, I know, you know, one thing's for sure. You know, Miami is a front-runner city. I mean, everybody gives us bad rep about bad, you know, fair-weather fans. But you know, once we're a big event city, you got to have a good event. You got to have stars. I mean, the same thing could be said about the Dolphins. I mean, look at that. We're talking about firing a coach. Nobody goes to our games because the product is just bad. You know, the same thing goes with the Canes. They want to fire Golden and everything. But that's – Miami is – of course, everybody gives us that rep, but you got to have a big card or a big event. I'll tell
but
you one thing, guys.
But what is a big card, though? But that's my issue, though. If you did Pacquiao Mayweather in Miami, you could fill up the Sun Life Stadium. But Rigondeaux by himself or even with Gamboa, I think there's a certain segment of hardcore fans that would say, oh, this is great. Meanwhile, the rest of the 99.8% of the populace wouldn't care or know.
Yeah, it's probably just there's so many things to do in Miami, and, you know, it's just that's just how it is. I mean, you know how it is being a Canes fan. It's going to that Nebraska game. I was there, and it was empty. And
Hold on. It wasn't as empty as it usually is, but, I mean, the banners, yeah. But, hey, listen, all I got to say is this. If the city of Miami can't enjoy Brad Kaya, shame on them.
No. I don't know what that all about. But, yeah, like also, you know, Pedraza should be fighting in Puerto Rico as well. I mean, I also been to Lopez and Salido too, and that was a great atmosphere. I mean, that round 9, I thought the roof was going to explode out of the Coliseum of Roberto Clemente.
Let me tell you something. I was there in Puerto Rico for the Salido Juanma rematch, and I was there this past April for Rocky Martinez Salido 1. And the one thing that I've learned very quickly about that island is that on the weekend of a fight, you look at the media coverage, you look at the television cameras, the news stations that come out for the weigh-ins.
Yeah,
boxing,
I was at the weigh-ins as well. It was a great atmosphere.
In Puerto Rico.
Yep, and look, in Miami, being a Miami boxing fan, the last fight that was actually big that I went to because I always took my brother was Freitas and Barrios. That was a war, and that was in the
2003.
That was in Miami Arena when it was the last show, and they tore down the arena after that, and they built the American Airlines Arena. After that fight, they said, you know, this is finally the event that we needed. We got the American Airlines ready, the new Heat Arena. We can put boxing events. There's probably been, I think, Mayweather, Roy Jones, Trinidad has fought in the American Airlines Arena. And those guys, I mean, Trinidad's fight was kind of packed. Roy Jones kind of packed. Mayweather was empty. That's when he fought Bruselli, a Puerto
Rican. I remember that.
Yeah, and I remember the day before I saw Mayweather in Tootsie's, and I'm like, wow, this is how serious the fight's going to be. He's in Tootsie's at 1 o'clock, and this was young Mayweather. I was like, wow, this is what a joke. But, yeah, I just say, but try it. You know, why not? I get jealous of you boxing fans in Cali and the West Coast. You guys got it. You know, I know you wish you were here to watch the Canes every week, and I wish I was over there.
I wouldn't go that far. Not every week. Hey, come on. They went 6-7 last year. But, hey, listen, I am an L.A. native. I cover boxing. If I can go to one home game, and one road game like I did the last couple of years, I'm good with that. I'm actually good with watching football live just a couple times a year. But as it relates to boxing in South Florida, I think that there are issues that, number one of the reasons why Southern California can support boxing is we have a large Mexican fan base. New York has a lot of Puerto Ricans. And if you're depending on Cuban boxers, no matter how good they are, to somehow be the foundation of South Florida boxing, I just do not believe that is feasible.
Yeah, because we got a bunch of world-class fighters that are champions that even local people from Miami don't even know who they are. Like, we will go out and I say, hey, this guy's a champ. Oh, he's a champ for what? Yeah, he's a 140-pound champ. Oh, you know, they'll be like, oh, I didn't know that guy. I said, yeah, that guy, you know, he's a beast in the ring. Oh, that guy looks like he's a waiter. I'm like, Jesus. It's just
Gabe, if you want to grow boxing and make fans, and again, I'm not knocking the artistry or the skill. Do you really want Rigondo to be that guy, Gabe?
I'm a Rigo guy, so you're asking the
wrong
one.
Rigo's a beast.
Okay, you're the one.
Rigo's a beast.
Okay.
Rigo's a beast. Let me tell you, Rigo has been black shafted, and that's another story from another time on our call. But Rigondor, that guy is one of the last dying breed, is one of the great champs. He's another guy, he's just, you know, 118, he can go up to 122. 126 is pushing it already. And he's going to have to make that move to 126 to make money and retire. You know, if he wants to make the money, he's going to have to sell himself out. And even if he has to sell himself out and lose and blow up to 126 and fight bigger guys, hey, you know, that's what he's got to do, because that's what happened to Joel Casamayor. Joel Casamayor would have gave hell to Morales, Barrera, and Marquez at 126. But you know what? He had to go up to 130, and he had to fight. He had to go up to bigger weights and fight bigger fighters for the money. And, you know, hopefully Rigondeaux finds that somebody to fight at 122, which I doubt. You know, the guy's almost like 40 years old.
I'll give El Cepillo credit. At 130, that's a guy that Mayweather was in no rush to fight.
Exactly. Yeah, those were tales. I mean, Mayweather, he never really wanted to fight. They used to, like, spar back in the day, and he knew that, you know, that he'll give him problems. Why do you think Mayweather doesn't want to fight a guy like Lara? Lara will outpoint Mayweather, and it will be the most boringest fight where he will beat Mayweather. And that's the truth. Styles make fights, and you can tell me, Steve, that, you know, it could happen, because I know for sure those guys are so fundamentally sound in the defensive posture and counterpunching, and it'll be like 7-5 a round, you know. It'll be like one of those fights that probably the each guy will land like 50 punches out of 200 thrown. But I guarantee that Lara gives problems to Mayweather, and he also was scared of Casamayor. But look at the classics that Casamayor had with Corrales. Those are other, you know, those are just great fights.
No, I hear you. All right, listen, we got to get running, okay? Appreciate the call. Let's go, Kane.
All right, thanks, guys. Thanks, Steve. All right, Gabe.
All right, man.
Big Thursday night showdown at Nippert Stadium. Brad Kyle leads them against the upstart Cincinnati Bearcats. Gabe, that was a lot of Cuban boxing talk, wasn't it? Whoa.
It was. I mean, that's, you know, Monday. Hey, like I said, big red giant moon. Weird things happen. We talked
a couple of tweets here before we re-hit the phone lines. Mr. Blue wants to ask, does Deontay Wilder even beat Michael Grant? It's a tough one.
I'll say no, just because, I mean, that Golota fight, you know? He showed some grit. He showed some power. He didn't beat a wily vet in Lennox Lewis, who was the same size as him. I wouldn't consider Deontay Wilder a wily vet. So I would lean with Grant, but, you know, it's hard to answer. That's a good point.
And here's one from at Kim Torres Rocks. Is Jean Pascal working with Freddie Roach? Okay, I wrote something for this, a quick brief on boxing scene. They had a 4-day trial run at the wild card yesterday, and Jean Pascal is going to make a decision if he's going to work with Mr. Roach going forward. If you want to jump in on the phone lines, we have them open, 347-215-7598. This is the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network. Steve Kim with Gabriel Montoya.
You gotta tell John I said hello. I want my emails back.
Okay. Oh, geez. Whoa, hey.
In the 805, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's up, guys?
What's up, man?
Nacho. What's going on?
Nothing much. First of all, I heard you guys say something about, what was the name you called the premier, the PBC?
Oh, the Ponzi Boxing Championship.
Yeah, the Ponzi. How about predetermined boxing champions instead?
That works too. That works too.
That fits the old.
Oh, okay. Yeah, exactly. That was terrible to watch, man. I mean, I got to see some of the highlights, man. That's just, jeez. If they're looking for any more soft touches, I mean, I don't know how much softer you can get than that guy.
Well, I mean, so, you got to run out of people at some point, aren't they? You know?
Well, they dug up that guy, and I had never even heard of him. So, I mean, I'm wondering where the hell Al Heyman finds these guys. So.
They're calling one iota for opponents as well as audience members.
Nacho, I consider you a hardcore boxing fan. Now, I listen, for me, there was a lot of college football on, but I ended up watching all the cards from BN, Unimas, and NBC. Did you not even bother with the PBC card this past Saturday night?
Yeah, you know what? I did not. I actually ended up watching the BN card with Estrada and Marquez.
Yeah.
Man, he just put it on Marquez. I think Marquez is done. I don't think he's got much left in the tank at this point. And then the Unomas card, I kind of watched it, but not really, because I ended up going out when it actually came on at, was it 11:30 at night? So I was already gone by that time. But, I mean, I saw the – I got to see like highlights of Andy Ruiz, and he looked good, but he still needs to lose about another 10, 15 pounds, to be honest.
The goal is to be in the low 240s. So they still have some work to do. I do think he looked physically better. But as Gabe pointed out earlier, you know, again, we'd like to see a guy fight back next time. What happened on Saturday night, Nacho, if you watched the first round, you watched all eight of them, because that fight pattern did not change throughout the night with him and Joel Godfrey.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it kind of looked like. It looked like there wasn't much of any resistance being put up by the other guy. It looked like a sparring session more than anything. So, I was gonna ask, is it true that Glenn Tapia is sparring with Miguel Cotto for his fight coming up?
I read that on Twitter. I don't know why I would doubt that. I don't know what Glenn Tapia has left at this point. Is he nothing more than a sparring partner?
Yeah, that's a little. Yeah, I at this point, I mean, the punch resistance, that's something you just can't get. I mean, is he cutting so much weight that maybe he doesn't take a good punch, or is it just that's the one thing they didn't know about him and now they know? You know, that it may never be the same after the Kirkland fight.
Yeah, that might be the case. So, also with the fights that, well, I know one of them got made with between Yvonne Michelle and Kathy Duva. Is there any chance the other one gets made between Barrera and Beterbiev, or is that not going to happen?
The issue with Barrera-Sullivan, or Sullivan-Barrera, is that I guess there's a visa issue or some sort of immigration problem where he may not be able to get into Canada, and I think that complicates the issue. So I'll let the lawyers decide that one.
Okay. And then real quick, the Chudinov Buglioni fight, did you guys watch that?
My DVD copy is on its way. I understand Chudinov pretty much just chewed him out, didn't he?
Yeah, he pretty much, he did his thing. He pretty much beat up on Buglioni, but I was kind of shocked because he actually did hurt him pretty badly in the sixth round, but then when he landed a really good right hand that hurt him, I guess it was right after the bell, and the referee ended up deducting 2 points.
So, now, Nacho, are you going to the StubHub Center this weekend?
Yes, I am. I actually am going to go check that out because I've been a fan of Matisse since pretty much day one. So I'm definitely going to see. I'm interested to see how he handles fighting a guy this huge in Postal. So, yeah, I definitely am going, and I will be there.
Okay, Nacho, look forward to seeing you.
All right, thanks.
All right, man.
Do you want to call in? We have a few more minutes left, going all the way up to 6 o'clock if need be. That number, 347-215-7598. Gabe?
978. You're live on the next round. Somebody getting their shoe phone out.
Yeah, what's going on there?
Hello, 978?
Or not.
Or not. All right. 256. Trying to get some fresh blood in here. 256.
Yes.
You're live on the next round. 256. And when I say fresh blood, I mean fresh knockdowns. 714. 714. You're live on the next round. 714.
Hey, guys. It's Lenny the Fight Smith.
What's
Lenny?
Up, Lenny?
Well, it's been a long time. Where have you been?
Working and kind of, it's like a drone of constant mediocre boxing that's made it hard for me to watch and hard for me to keep up the last couple of months.
Yeah.
Now, I know that you were riveted to NBC on Saturday night.
You know what? This is one that I actually DVR'd. It's on so many networks that it's hard. It's like work to DVR this stuff. I mean, because you have
to watch
on
it.
CBS. On NBC, it's hard. Yeah, it's just as hard as it is to watch, I guess. Yeah, but I actually watched this fight. I watched the card in double speed, which I think is the only way you can watch any of the PBC cards. You know, I missed the first part of the show, so I'm sorry if you guys went over this already. But Dougie Fisher in his mailbag today. I think I've been watching Wilder, and there's just something wrong with him. With the way that he fights, like there's just something stylistically that just doesn't seem right. And I think Dougie nailed it on the head. He constantly looks like he's cocked, ready to throw one big punch, and he's just relying on that one big punch. And it just doesn't look fundamentally sound at all to me. And he hasn't fixed that.
Well, I know exactly which portion of the mailbag you're talking about. When that guy actually invoked the name Tommy Hearns, I just skipped over to the next letter. But there's no need to insult the Motor City Cobra like that. I will not stand for it, gentlemen.
I mean, just the talk of Wilder being kind of the next great American heavyweight. He's a title holder, which I mean we can't take away from the guy. But I mean, I think I think Jennings beats him in a fight. I think a handful of other American up and comers give him a ton of trouble.
Yeah, I don't
know.
I hate seeing all this whole lineage, you know, the American heavyweight legacy, and here's Deontay Wilder joining it, fighting some guy you've never heard of. I mean, I guess on some level that's American legacy, but it's just the PBC trying to rewrite history and link itself to history. It just makes me sick.
Lenny, will you be now? Lenny, I know just about every show in the last 3 years. That has taken place at the StubHub. I've seen you and sometimes your significant other. Will you be there this weekend?
You know, I would, and I actually had tickets, and I had to sell them because my one of my good friends is getting married on Saturday, so it was a tough call. But
chances are, in 3 years they might be divorced. I just want to let you know. Just saying.
I know.
Okay, Lenny, anything else we could do for you?
No, thanks a lot, guys.
By the way, we got this tweet. You guys have valid points about the PBC, but damn, give it a chance. Two-year process. Says who? Gabe. How about we give our opinion, and then if they change our opinion, we give it to that opinion. How about that, Gabe?
Why am I supposed to like something before I see it? I just don't understand, you know? Like... I remember talking to Julian Williams and interviewing him, and he kind of gave me the party line. Well, it's free. Anything that's free, I'm going to like. That's not true. I've seen plenty of free things that I found not entertaining, not fun, didn't want to see him again, and was like, well, if you really wanted to screw me, they would have given me two. And that's the PBC on a lot of levels. I mean, every once in a while they get good fights, but I don't see, like, there's not like a restructuring of the sport in the sense that, okay, this is a league, this fight. This bracket leads to this bracket. and that's how we're going to fight this division out. There's no rhyme or reason to it. And I don't see the benefit in terms of the history of the sport where you're building guys as regional draws, putting them in places where they're actually going to sell tickets. All that stuff didn't need to be rewritten. It needs to be used again. Like you and I have said for the past, I don't know how many years now, that what boxing needs is better promoters and more of them, not somebody to completely reinvent the wheel. And you got Jose Pedraza doing a second title defense in front of hopefully somebody in Cincinnati. It doesn't make any sense. So sorry if that isn't, if criticism bothers you, but like Steve said, you know, do better and I'll have better things to say.
Yeah. If you like it, like it. I mean, honestly, I don't try to change your opinion. I just happen to think, and kids, close your ears, I think it's a hot sack of crap most of the time. That's my opinion. Unfortunately, my job kind of makes me watch this hot sack of crap. It is what it is. Gabe, I understand we have one more caller. Let's get to it.
Let's see it. 517, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
What's up, man?
Not a whole lot. I'm just getting out of class. I was actually just listening. I was walking to my car, but yeah, about Wilder. Touch on that a little bit. I'm not sold on that boy, man. He's gonna get knocked out by Povetkin if he ever gets the balls to go in there and fight him, man.
You know, that may or may not be true, but let me play devil's advocate on Wilder. Isn't he generally more entertaining and fun to watch than Klitschko?
This is true.
Right? I mean, Gabe, do you disagree?
I'm sorry.
Don't you find Deontay Wilder against the same level of opposition, and I posed this question on Twitter yesterday, isn't he more entertaining and compelling than Vladimir Klitschko?
In 2015, yes. And even in general, yes, because he's vulnerable. I like guys that are a little bit vulnerable like that. They can be gotten to, you know, but they're still, I mean, it was a high-paced fight. It wasn't a hug fest. It wasn't a slog to watch it. It was just kind of, you know, it was a senseless beating of a guy named Johan, you know. It wasn't really competitive. but yeah, I mean, yes, the answer is yes. I do find him interesting and exciting to watch, but I don't like them telling me that he is what he isn't, you know.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. I don't have a problem watching him. I just don't see him as being the guy to beat everybody. I mean, that's pretty all it is to it. You know,
there's a sucker born every minute, as P.T. Barnum once said famously, but not everyone's a sucker. And I think most people that follow boxing, even on a somewhat hardcore level, they understand who the best heavyweight is. It's Vladimir Klitschko. But, you know, listen, Deontay Wilder, for a guy with relatively short amateur experience, has actually come a long way. I still remember watching Deontay on some of these Golden Boy undercards when Shelly Finkel was still his manager back in 2009 and 10, and I said to myself, this guy is just going to be as good as Seth Mitchell maybe. He's actually come a long way. Now, do I think he has a problem with the chin? Yes. Me and Gabe were there when Harold Scanyers buzzed him hard, and I think that has played a factor in their matchmaking. But, I mean, I appreciate him for what he is. He's vulnerable, he's compelling, he's exciting, he's flawed. In many respects, that makes for better entertainment than the overall dominance of a Vladimir Klitschko.
True. Mm-hmm. True. But in your opinion, is he going to get past Sasha?
In my opinion, he may not get to Sasha.
I agree with that, too.
It's going to take Wilder, you know, doing another thing that like he did with Stiverne, a very disciplined fight where he looked good, you know, in the next one. This one, you just use the jab all night, mix in an occasional right hand. Don't get crazy. I think Povetkin can be had. I mean, Klitschko shut him down, being a taller guy with a, you know, a long jab and a long right hand. I think those things are still available. I mean, Povetkin's got so much experience. He brings a lot more to the table, you know, than Wilder does in that experience. So it's an interesting fight. I think it's a very, very tough fight. I'm kind of leaning with Steve that it's not going to happen. I think the WBC will push it, but it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Anything else we could do for you?
No, go ahead, man. I see you in New York, though. I won't make it to the suburb, but I see you in New York.
Absolutely. Look forward to it. Thank you very much. Gabe, is that it for the phone calls?
Actually, no. I picked up another 517. So we'll go to 517 again. You're live on the next round. 517.
Ooh, once bitten, twice shy here.
Yeah. And that. Oh, wait a minute. No, there's a 954. 954, you're live on the next round.
And there isn't.
This is a regular Estrada Marquez. That is it for all our calls. We have knocked them all down. There you go.
All right, well, that's it for this week's edition of The Next Round. On behalf of Gabriel Montoya and Dave Duenas, this is Steve Kim saying, till the next round, goodbye, everybody.